And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
From the Golden Gate to the New York Bay.
What I have access to is a bit different than the public.
Tamper with you.
Welcome to Tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Tam, Anthony Slater, and Fred Katz.
To be able to bring people together.
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about them. Can't even mention teams anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
Trial you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
Hey, baby, you know, I tamper with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened. I'm just telling you what happened.
Here's your host, Sam Amick.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show Network. I'm Sam Amick, NBA national writer at The Athletic. Usual suspect, Anthony Slater, on the program today, coming from his West Coast hub. And we got another West Coaster, friend of the program, friend in life. All things Lakers. Jovan Buha has certainly been on the pod before. Jovan, you thought you might be out in Cancun. You thought you might be, mowing the lawn. I don't know if you have a lawn. You thought you would be doing.
I don't, and I wouldn't be mowing it if I did.
I literally mowed my lawn today, as an aside. Suburban life. Your Lakers
I'm
are
not
in...
a handyman. I'm not.
Well, hold on a minute. This is not a Bob Vila podcast, but mowing a lawn doesn't make you a handyman. That's all right though. Your Lakers are. In the second round of the NBA playoffs, what is happening? A couple months ago when you and I were reporting on the Russell Westbrook experience in Lakerland, and prior to that, you know, all kinds of drama with the Lake Show, but most of it did not involve winning games. They turn their season around. Rob Pelinka wins the NBA trade deadline. They play well down the stretch. They get to the second round, and they now find themselves, and that's why today's pod is perfect, because Slater is all things Warriors first and foremost. They find themselves taking on the one, the only Steph Curry and the Warriors. I mean, it doesn't get much better than this in the second round, guys. It's, you know, Steph versus LeBron is the kind of boxing style headline billboard framing of this series. First time since 2018 when they met in the finals that we have seen them. Fifth time total. That was a very long intro, but thank you, gentlemen, for joining me today. I can't wait to dive into this series. Jovan, what's up, sir? How are you?
I'm doing well. I think, well, technically, do we count the play-in tournament? Because they did meet in 2021 in the 7-8 matchup. The Lakers won by three.
Fair.
I mean, the
Doesn't
Warriors,
the NBA Warriors, like not even count those stats? They're no. These like mysterious.
Stats don't count. That's when like Draymond poked LeBron in the eye. LeBron hits that like 34-foot dagger where he says,
"Oh, where he was
saw
like, I was seeing three baskets."
Yeah,
that's right.
But you know that I feel like that's a, like that's probably the closest thing we have to a preview of like what this could look like, maybe, because the regular season matchups it's a little tough to take away. Like, you know, three of them happen after the trade deadline, so technically with the Lakers,
I think makes the data more useful, right?
But LeBron missed two games. Steph missed two games. Wiggins missed two games. So yeah. It's like, you know, any matchup without LeBron or Steph, it's just, you know, you can only take away so much. But yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a tough series. I think both, like for both teams, really, it's a stylistic 180 compared to the previous opponent they just had in the first round. For the Lakers, they were playing a Grizzlies team that just could not shoot. And the strategy was pack the paint, funnel everything to AD. And I know they're going to try to do some of that against the Warriors, but you are going to have to live with those, you know, 3-point barrages that they go on. And obviously for Golden State, a much different offense in the Lakers, and, you know, them attacking the rim, trying to get to the free throw line, much more physical, bigger defense, I think, also in the Lakers. So really, I'm interested to see kind of the game one feel out process of both of these teams having to adjust drastically to their previous, I think, schemes really on both ends, and kind of how that chess match plays out in like that first quarter, first half.
Yeah, the schemes will be interesting. But even before that, like, just I think this is really good for the league. I think the first round, especially the war, you know, Lakers Memphis was a really good first round series, better than your typical first round series. Obviously, storyline filled, the ratings were good. Warriors Kings exploded ratings wise. It went seven, which, you know, the league always loves a good game seven, particularly, you know, and they wouldn't obviously say this, but if their brand moves on, right? And it moves on right into Warriors Lakers, where it's, you know, this will probably outrate last year's finals, right? This will probably outrate most of the, particularly the last few finals. Like, this is going to be huge branding wise, I think, for the league at this part of the calendar. And also from a Warriors perspective, they get home court, which means that they could get an extra home game in the second round, which they did not see coming, right? I think I saw a stat that this is the latest in the playoffs a six seed has ever had home court, which means there's never been a 6-7 in the second round. Which is kind of crazy.
That might explain why we had two columns on The Athletic today about whether or not the regular season matters anymore.
But yeah.
That's a different topic.
It is fair. I mean, and Jovan just laid it out, how, like, how much can we really take from the regular season matchups? I just had the same thought when I was previewing Warriors Kings, and basically now it's like every matchup you don't even know going in, because it's like, this guy didn't play with. But I wanted to go back to quickly for the Warriors. I just think this, from a financial standpoint, is huge for them. To squeak by the Kings and to get the money that is going to be flowing in gate-wise in this second round, you're probably thinking, this is going at least five, right? Nobody's predicting a sweep. That's at least three home games and home Lakers playoff games, where the pricing I've already seen for both venues is skyrocketing. So I just think, as the Warriors enter this kind of unknown landscape, what are they going to do this offseason, this crazy tax bill and all the CBA implications that are ahead, I just think Lakers-Warriors comes at a very good time for both league and, I think, both franchises.
Slater, so much concern for the league's bottom line. You know, you just worried about this plucky little basketball league that's not making much
money.
Would you
both agree that, like, the ratings have been concerning the last few years, the last half decade? Like, it's been on a downturn.
For sure. And you know what? The part of me that just enjoys the game would say that what I like about how it's unfolded so far, tell me if you guys disagree, is that it's been fairly holistic, organic, whatever you want to call it, meaning we don't have many controversies in terms of, like Slater, you kind of alluded earlier to the league's brand getting through on the Warriors side in the second round. The Warriors went and beat the hell out of the Kings in game seven from a basketball standpoint. There's no controversy. It's not an officiating conspiracy theory type of thing. It's just lining up this kind of way. And I think you're right. I mean, Lakers Grizzlies, not to go too far backwards, but that was compelling. That was fascinating. Old versus young. You know, Jovan on the Warriors side, I was cracking up because the Warriors made such a big deal out of what I thought was a fairly innocuous Malik Monk quote, not saying there, he did not call them old. He said, you know, we're a little younger than they are, but it was that similar, like, Dylan Brooks type of quote. So you had that old versus young thing in Warriors Kings. It's good theater, right? And it was compelling and entertaining. And yes, now you have Lakers Warriors second round. I don't think this guy would mind me sharing this. Like, Rich Paul was at the Kings game, you know, game seven, and I saw him on the way out of the building, and he was just kind of like shaking his head at the idea that LeBron and Steph were meeting in the second round. Like, he was almost lamenting, like, you know, it's too bad it's not the conference finals, but whatever. Like, the conference finals still have all kinds of good possible matchups down the line. I think it'll be fun. And to go back to Jovan, how I kind of threw it to you, you know, how do you see this in terms of the Lakers and the question of how legitimate they are right now and how dangerous they are right now? Because it is still, my brain is still having a hard time compartmentalizing or processing the before and the after of who they are. And then I've just seen the Warriors play like the good old-fashioned dynasty Warriors. You know, I do have the Warriors winning this series in however many games. I think they are the better team, but how do you see it?
Yeah, I've gone back back and forth. I think my first initial reaction was like Warriors in six or seven. And then I went through some film, kind of looked over the numbers. I guess I'm contradicting myself a little bit in taking away some stuff where I do think, I think the Lakers match up with the Warriors pretty, you know, well on the perimeter in terms of their defense and their, you know, like to me, I just wrote a preview for the series, and D'Angelo Russell to me is the X factor of, you know, I don't know who he starts on defensively. I think it's going to be Clay or Andrew Wiggins. And then if you're the Warriors, you're probably targeting that guy and bringing him up into actions with Steph and, you know, maybe running some post ups or ISOs where, you know, those guys can just shoot over D'Lo and kind of body him and stuff. So I think he's important just because offensively, I know the Lakers are going to try and limit Golden State's attack, but you know, there's going to be stretches where it's just a shootout. And I don't think the Lakers can win a shootout if D'Lo's not on the floor, you know, with those, you know, you saw the you know, runs he's had, you know, the game six against the Grizzlies comes to mind in that third quarter where he hits four threes and really just buries them. But he had a couple stretches like that in that series where D'Lo really is one of those guys that can just heat up. And it's just an avalanche of you know, mid-range jumpers, threes, you know, pick and roll action. So I think for the Lakers to have a chance in at least a couple of these games that end up being a little high scoring, they're going to need some big D'Lo performances. But I think there's just a chess match of
quickly, you know, on the D'Lo thing. And we've got to remember there's a personal connection here too. I mean, the Warriors signed him to the big deal that he's finishing right now and decided within 3-4 months that they just didn't think he was a winning player. I mean, like, that was made very clear. Obviously traded him to Minnesota, a willing participant that not only gave them Andrew Wiggins, but also gave them the draft pick that became Jonathan Kuminga, another side story of the series that we can maybe get to. But I just think what the Warriors have viewed D'Lo as and what D'Lo can maybe show against them in the series is kind of a subplot.
Yeah, and I said, you know, the kind of the final line for me in my, you know, portion of the story about him being the X Factor was, I think this is going to go a long way in determining how much money he gets this summer. Like if D'Lo, because D'Lo had some rough stretches in the Memphis series where, you know, he was benched at times and had some subpar performances offensively.
Two straight years, by the way. Remember in Minnesota last year, he was benched for McLaughlin in game six against Memphis.
So, and the Lakers have all the guys they could go to. Austin Reeves obviously has really broken out since the trade deadline and has kind of stepped up as really more of the number three than D'Lo has been, at least from a consistency standpoint. Dennis Schroeder is a Darvin Ham favorite, someone he loves closing with, and you know, someone who's played a big role off the bench. I think it's going to be big in this series defending Steph and trying to navigate screens and whatnot. So I think the Lakers have other alternatives that they can go to if D'Lo's shot isn't falling, if he's getting picked on defensively. But I look at him on the Lakers side as a key kind of swing guy. For the Warriors, I look at Kevon Looney. And, you know, we saw, you know, 3 20 rebound games against the Kings. And I think the Lakers are going to ignore him. I think they're going to ignore Draymond. But then you get into the dribble handoff actions, the kind of quick hitting pick and rolls that they get into. And, you know, I think if AD and LeBron are roaming and trying to put out fires on the perimeter or, you know, send more attention to Steph or Clay or, you know, Wiggins or Poole, then now all of a sudden Austin Reeves is matched up with Kevon Looney on a switch in the paint. And, you know, can he battle him and keep him off the glass? And like, it's going to be to me a lot of that chess match of the Lakers guards and wings having to keep Kevon Looney and Draymond Green off the glass and make sure those guys aren't making the Lakers pay for, you know, paying again, extra attention to other guys. So just those little things I think are going to be fascinating.
It's Slater, real quick, Looney how for do you sure, see, but it's Wiggins too on the offensive glass. Sam, you should go, but I know Wiggins, especially if they put Russell on him, they'll tell Wiggins crash. They might not post him up a bunch, but it's just like, go attack the glass. Sam, go ahead.
No, I just wanted your take on the front court before you get to Wiggins. The Looney thing, I mean, it was incredible to see what he did against the Kings. I mean, Jovan, this was kind of a funny moment. He's walking out of the locker room after game seven. Warriors esteemed PR man Ray Ritter is trying to get him to the press conference room,
And so many words, he says, Wilt, are you ready? And he calls him Wilt. And as he's walking, and I kind of laughed, and Kevon was right next to me. And I said, man, you better tell him to get you that Wilt contract. And quite the retort, another member of the PR staff looks at me and goes, yeah, that was probably about 80 grand a year. You know, so I said, all right, fair enough. But he was a monster against the Kings. And I'm looking
at... Well, you remember what this... to extend your story, this conversation was about... They were thanking him because he had just done his like fifth or sixth different post-game interview, right? He was like, besides Steph, the star of the show, the second best player in the series, he'd just gone and done NBA TV, like ISO studio interview, this and that. And I think he was like, you know, thanks again, Wilt, or something like
yes.
that.
Yes. I mean, yeah. But he looked like Wilt out there on the court, too. But how's that going to look against these Lakers? Because... You know, Slater, I'm looking at AD's game log from this Grizzlies series, and I know this is kind of fun with numbers. I'm framing it to make him look bad, but like three of his last five games scoring in the teens, and I think I have this right. I mean, he's coming in, you know, like 14, I think, of 36 from the field combined. And that's just the up and down nature of AD and how that matchup looks. Your thoughts?
I don't think they're that scared of him on the offensive end. I think they do know, like, look, he had a 39-point game against them this year, and if he has one of those games, especially when he's hitting jumpers, like, that's going to be very tough to beat the Lakers. But I think if the Lakers primarily are just letting Davis go one-on-one against Draymond or Looney, the Warriors are okay with that. They feel like he's not that efficient of a jump shooter. And as you saw with Sabonis in that series, these are, I think, two of the top 10 best defensive bigs in the league. So they'll just take that challenge. Where I think Davis is a major problem for the Warriors is on the other end. You saw it during the regular season. Three of the Warriors' worst 15 offensive games this season came against the Lakers. What they found they could do against the Kings, and this was Draymond scoring 21 in game five on the road to get a win, and obviously Steph yesterday. How many just little float shots?
22
was he just
points
shooting
in the paint.
Getting in there and like, oh, Domantas Sabonis is coming over. Not concerned. Layup off the glass. That's not Anthony Davis. This Warriors team is small and historically has struggled with size, particularly when you have an elite rim protector. I'm thinking Jaren Jackson in a Memphis series. Robert Williams. Remember how good Robert Williams was in the finals, even though he was dragging his right leg up the court basically half the time? I just think Davis, he showed it in the regular season. He showed it in the past. He bothers the smaller Warriors, and then creates a very concerning question for the Warriors, where defensively they want to play Looney and Draymond together, right? That's this elite starting lineup. They went back to it in game seven, but it's very tough for them to play two non-shooting bigs who don't even care about shooting jumpers, against a team with a great rim protector. They could do it against Sacramento. I don't know if they can do it against the Lakers. So then you're talking about, shift to Jordan Poole. What type of series is Jordan Poole coming off right now?
Well, and that's the problem, I think, potentially offensively with the Warriors, is that Steph has carried them in this first round. And what if, like you said, Slater, AD is protecting that rim and those lanes get shut down? Now you're having to lean on Clay and Wiggins and Poole. And I got the numbers in front of me here. I mean, you know, Steph was at 33.5 basically points per game in this series. And number two was Clay down at 20. And then Wiggins at 18. Jordan Poole had a tough series. He's down at 12. I think that comes into play. I also want your thoughts, either one of you guys, on the Lakers being so much more egalitarian, I guess you'll call it, just the way they spread things out offensively. You know, when not so long ago, this was the LeBron, AD, and the Misfits type approach.
I want to give Jovan that question because I'm curious. But to add to your point, Sam, I thought it was interesting. Were you in Draymond's press conference last night?
I was, yeah.
He mentioned LeBron being off ball more than ever and how impressed he was that LeBron was playing off the ball much more than the Cleveland teams they're used to. The Cleveland teams the Warriors are used to was LeBron control pace the entire time, slow it down, have the ball. It seems that they believe he's a different version of himself because of who the Lakers are. Is that what you're seeing with the Lakers?
Yeah. So kind of fun stat from last series, the Lakers had five different leading scorers in their six games, including of course, once LeBron, twice AD, but Rui Hachimura led them in game one. Austin Reeves led them in a game, and D'Angelo Russell ended up leading them in game six. So just from that alone, another fun number from the championship season was that that championship group, and you know, one of the knocks on them throughout the regular season when comparing them to the Clippers and the Bucks was like, who's the Lakers' number three guy? Like, is it Kyle Kuzma? Is it KCP? Is it like, can those guys score in the playoffs, et cetera, et cetera? And they had one guy, Rondo, score 20 or more points in a playoff series or in a playoff game in the bubble. And that was Rondo against the Rockets. I believe that was conference semifinals. Already,
didn't he get like randomly super hot from 3-1 game against the Rockets?
I think that's the game where he gets 21 points. But already this series, D'Lo has had a 21-point game. Or, I mean, a 31-point game. Austin Reeves has had a couple 20-point games. Rui's had a couple 20-point games. So like, you're seeing a much, I don't know if they're a better supporting cast, because I think that supporting cast was underrated. They obviously won a championship, but from an offensive perspective, they're definitely a better supporting cast, and just the weaponry that they have and the different ways they can attack you, where, okay, you want to take out AD in the post, you want to take out LeBron in the pick and roll or in the post. Like, they have guys that can make shots. They have guys that can attack from the second side, different actions they can go to. So I really think that this is a much better group offensively than really any of the Lakers' previous LeBron AD groups. And defensively, I mean, they were the best defense in the league after the trade deadline. So I think coming in,
second best, Jovan, real quick, in the playoffs, and it's pretty close, them and Philly. And I know it's a small sample size, but
Philly got Brooklyn, so I feel like that's a slight asterisk,
right?
Too,
yeah,
right?
And they're right there, so it's carried over so far too.
It's carried over, and I think, you know, again, to you know, Slater's point, like there's more chess match things where, like, can Jared Vanderbilt stay on the floor, and can he handle Steph? Or you know, I think there's kind of two variations of that perimeter, the way they go with those perimeter matchups of, you know, one is Vanderbilt on Steph, and then you probably go D'Lo on Wiggins and Reeves on Clay, or you go Reeves on Steph, Vanderbilt on either Clay or Wiggins, and then you put Russell on the other guy. But I'm interested to see who they put Russell on, because that to me is kind of like the sign of who's the lesser threat in the Lakers' eyes. And if that's Clay, like, I got to think the Warriors are going to try and run him off a bunch of off ball stuff. But
yeah, I mean, the Warriors, I think, would love that, right, Slater?
Probably.
Because if it's Clay, first of all, he didn't have a very good first round. He's going to be thirsty. He's in his hometown. He talked at length after game 7 about how excited he is, and the kind of neat, you know, personal tie with his dad's history with the franchise. He grows up, you know,
his dad's going to be hilarious.
He will be hilarious. Has he given a public prediction? I thought about calling him today. Do we know what dad is saying?
I don't know if he's given a public prediction, but typically every time the Warriors and Lakers play, I go on their pregame, the Lakers pregame radio. And Michael Thompson's one of the people like that's within the interview, and he's just firing takes about the Warriors, and they're great. Like, he was they'll rue the day they'll trade James Wiseman, and like all these things. And it's like, it's just funny, because typically it's like, wow, like, this is Klay Thompson's dad saying these things. But if you're on the inside, you understand, like, Klay's opinions and Michael's opinions shouldn't be considered, you know. But a lot of times, I think sometimes in sports, like, if a parent says it, we ascribe it too much to the player. But Michael's going to be funny during this series, I think.
No, I agree. But on the Clay front, I just think he's going to be thirsty, because he knows that Steph can't carry the entire group again. And, you know, we know how proud Clay is. He's been reminding us all season long. If he's jawing with Devin Booker and flashing four fingers, you know, to remind everybody he's got four rings, or kind of barking at Charles Barkley about the doubt that, you know, that Chuck kind of expressed earlier in the season about who Clay is in the here and the now. He's got a lot to play for. I think he's going to be fired up. And I think they'd be just fine with, you know, think about that in a vacuum. The idea of picking on Clay Thompson, even if he's not exactly what he used to be, that's good for the Warriors. And again, I think they're in a good spot here.
Yeah. I think one thing to quickly add that, you know, I probably should have mentioned earlier is, like, I think the biggest thing looming over this entire series for me is the health of LeBron and AD. You know, I think both guys had moments. I mean, you mentioned the multiple games in the teens for AD. Like, you know, part of that was Memphis's defense and the way that you know, Xavier Tillman was able to body him one-on-one. Honestly, in similar ways to how Kevon Looney and Draymond Green were able to defend him in the regular season as well. But I think part of it too is AD and LeBron have both not really looked physically right since kind of the end of the regular season. You know, for LeBron, coming back from that foot injury, really earlier than anyone expected. I mean, everything we had heard kind of around the team was maybe the final few games of the regular season. He comes back with 8 games left, and he's had some good games. He's had some good moments. He's still throwing down these ridiculous dunks in game, but like overall, kind of for the aggregate, LeBron has not been the same player offensively since his return. And I think AD, has kind of had some of those moments as well, where he was someone that was resting back to backs throughout most of the season. And I think just the workload that he's had to endure, partially with LeBron out, that's kind of caught up to him. So I think for both guys, like the Lakers really needed, I think that this few days of rest here, I think you're going to see a spry group coming out of game one. But then after that, it's every other day. And I know it's probably going to add up to both sides, where, both sides have guys in their 30s, but I just wonder, like, if LeBron plays the way he played in the Memphis series, I think the Lakers definitely lose this series. Like, they need a LeBron that we haven't really seen since his return from injury.
All right, let's take a quick break right there, because the perfect segue. I want to talk more LeBron, more Steph on the other side. Let's hone in on the superstars in this matchup, and we will be right back on the other side of this break.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it: tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods.
All right, gents. Let's, like I said, dive in on more LeBron, more Steph. Jovan, your point about LeBron is well taken, because I was going to get your perspective on that front. If I told you going into the first round, hey, Jovan, Lakers beat writer extraordinaire, LeBron's going to average 11.2 rebounds, 5.2 assists. He's going to shoot 48.6% from the field, which for kind of, a mortal man, it sounds just fine, but he's had plenty of playoff series where he was in the 60s or in that neighborhood. And he's going to shoot 19.5% from three on high volume, 6.8 attempts per game. That would not bode well, you would imagine, for the Lakers. But again, they are built differently. Spin it forward for me with LeBron. Is he trending in the right direction? What are you seeing in terms of his impact in winning basketball from LeBron?
Well, he's found different ways to impact the game, where, game four, he gets a 20-20, first time in his career, playoffs or regular season, he grabs 20 rebounds in a game, ends up, making the layup to send the game to overtime, then the game ceiling and one over Dylan Brooks. He flexes to the crowd and roars. And that was really, I think, a special moment for him and the Lakers crowd with honestly, there haven't been many of them with their championship run coming in the bubble. He hasn't had a lot of playoff moments to celebrate, but that was one of them that I think, is going to be, when we look back on LeBron in LA, like that's going to be one of those plays and one of those moments that I think is referenced. But I think for LeBron, he's been very jump shot heavy. And you mentioned like that 19% on threes has primarily been just him going like 2 for 9, a lot of nights or, you know, 4 for 14. And it's like, he's just relying too much on his 3-point shot. And, you know, the Grizzlies were able to get away with Xavier Tillman defending LeBron, you know, one-on-one for a lot of that series. And the fact that he either didn't have the confidence to drive by Xavier Tillman or just couldn't in some instances, you know, would try to put a couple moves on him. Xavier would hang with him. And it was just like, this does not look like the LeBron that we're accustomed to blowing by the best defenders in the league. And now he's got this, you know, 6'8" big man center who's kind of slowing him down. So I wonder, you know, how Golden's, I mean, I'm interested to see what Slater thinks, but, you know, to Draymond's point, like he has been much more off the ball, and that's been the Lakers kind of splitting the ball handling duties between LeBron, D'Lo, Austin Reeves, Dennis, when he's on the floor. You know, they'll run some second side actions to get him in mismatches and post him up, ISO him. He'll of course run pick and roll with AD when they really need a bucket, but definitely more off the ball than we're accustomed to seeing. And I don't know, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, can Golden State get away with Kevon Looney on him during stretches, like, and maybe putting Draymond on AD. Like I'm really interested to see how they approach
this. This is where it was absolutely imperative that Andrew Wiggins return to the team, like this type of matchup. Like they can't handle a big wing if Andrew Wiggins isn't there. But now that Andrew Wiggins is back, and you know, he wasn't great in game 7, but I think generally, considering he missed 2 months, Sam and me were there, like that was a pretty impressive series from Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah, particularly shameless plug, I'll have a little conversation with Andrew coming out on the website by the time this is out on Tuesday. I guess. And he, yeah, not to interrupt you, Slater, but like he's the headline of our conversation was him saying it's only going to get better from here. He talked about his wind, how he spent a lot of last playoffs picking up full court, and he's like, I haven't done it once in these playoffs. And so I think that's a huge factor for sure.
Yeah, since he's gone to the Warriors, has become an elite wing defender, which, you know, was absurd to think about a couple of years ago. But you even go back to that play-in game that Jovan referenced earlier. He was good on LeBron in that game. And then obviously you go to the playoffs last year. Great on Luka, great on Tatum. Remember what he did to Tatum in the finals? So like this isn't some like, you know, throw Andrew Wiggins into the deep end. How is he going to handle it? This is, I think they feel very good about like Andrew Wiggins taking a bulk of the LeBron matchup. You know, they just against De'Aaron Fox had a tough time. I think Wiggins has a more difficult time with quicker guards like the Ja Morants, the Foxes. But he's 6'8", wiry, strong. What they can't do, which they tried on Fox, was like Gary Payton. You know, maybe Gary Payton gets a little bit, but he's really small for LeBron. Dante DiVincenzo, too small. The guy who I think is a wild card in this series, who completely fell out of the rotation during the last one and didn't really like that he did, but is Jonathan Kuminga. You know, physically, he can match LeBron just from a, you know, size, speed, lateral quickness, jump, all that. But Warriors got to get his head right, got to find lineups where he makes sense, because man, the Lakers ignore him offensively. And he's not a horrible 3-point shooter. He shot like 35-36%, but they just back off him so much, dare him to shoot, and he wants to believe that he's going to make the shot that sometimes kind of stalls the Warriors offense out. So as far as the LeBron plan, though, I don't think you'll see much Looney. I think it's just going to be a lot of Wiggins, a sprinkle of some Kuminga if they can get him on the court. And then maybe at key moments, if LeBron's like really going off, you just Draymond, you know, kind of like they did against Fox, right? If he needs to be the firefighter, if the house is burning down.
Guys, can we have the obligatory, and I may be tired, maybe cliche, but I think also interesting discussion about, you know, .. legacy. You know what I mean? I knew
he was going to say legacy.
I know. Like, I really don't pull this card that often.
It's true.
It's true.
It's
a little weird in the second round. It's funny because I hesitate to bring this up for a second round series, but it is true. And here's the way I want to frame it. I mean, Steph, he gets plenty of love, plenty of respect. Everybody knows he's an all-time great. I was watching the good old 4-letter network today, and Kendrick Perkins
made a hell of a point when he was actually analyzing the all-time playoff records of some of the best players in today's game. And the point he made about Steph was that in terms of winning percentage, it has been overlooked. That, and we're just talking about who's going to win Warriors Lakers. Well, guess what? Steph Curry has had 27 playoff series in his career. He's 23-4. Like, it's just absolutely insane. And
they just moved to 19-0 against Western Conference teams in the playoff series.
I actually, being a smart ass, I thought about this earlier with the Ja Morant quote, you know, now we fine in the West. It's like, no, Steph Curry's fine in the West. That's who's fine in the West, is the dude who never loses in the West. 19-0 in the West, 23-4 overall, because we hyper focus in the media on championships, right? And so it is fascinating that Steph and LeBron are both at four. LeBron has, and we, with LeBron, you're talking about that combination of championships and sustained greatness and always contending, but he's been in 51 playoff series. 51. He's 40-11. I mean, that record is phenomenal as well. You know, it, you, whenever we would, every year at The Athletic, we do these anonymous prediction things with scouts and executives. It always cracks me up because almost every person we talk to, they can't help themselves. One of the quotes is, well, I just can't bet against LeBron. Like, that's what you hear every single time. Well, that's why this series is fun. Because guess what? You really shouldn't bet against Steph either. The historical framing of it, I think, is fantastic. It's just going to make it fun to watch. But my ultimate point is that, man, with Steph, you know, and I know it's not, again, a boxing match. It's a team game. But this body of work and this 23-4 record, and this continued greatness, this series he's coming off with the Kings, and I just looked at this, of all 27 series in terms of just good old-fashioned scoring, that was his fourth highest scoring total in a series of the 27 at 35 years old. And LeBron's doing what he's doing, even with a tough first round, at 38. It's kind of like Draymond said after Game 7. Like, let's not try to turn the page too quick on the old fellas, because, damn, they're still good.
Yeah, two of the top 10 players in the league. I mean, Steph definitely is. Where would we put LeBron at this point? He's still probably.
Yeah. I thought you were saying all, like, because to me.
Oh, all time.
All time. Like, the all time thing. I mean, it's not the same as winning a finals, obviously. But I think I wrote in my preview, like I feel like LeBron looks at this as that there may as well be 12 Dylan Brooks on the other team. Like, I think this is going to be personal for LeBron. I think if he could get a win against the Warriors, a win against Steph as the underdogs yet again, for basically every, this is obviously the closest it's probably been maybe since 2016, I would say in terms of like the matchup, but
for sure. I mean, Durant was on the
yeah,
last.
So, but I think for LeBron to win this series, I think it would mean something to him. Obviously, again, not the same as beating the Warriors in the finals, not the same as winning a championship, but I think, like, for both sides, really, if Steph could get another one up on LeBron and is 4-1 in the playoffs against him, or LeBron could get another one and now it's 2-3 and that's a little bit more even, like, and then he can, you know, because the other thing to this is that's going to be fun is, like, Lakers Twitter versus Warriors Twitter. They've been on each other's corners for years, and LeBron fans versus Steph fans, and, like, you know, LeBron wins, it's going to be, oh, we'll see what would have happened if KD wasn't there. And if Steph wins, it's going to be, we'll see, you know, he didn't need KD. Like, it's just going to be back and forth with the fan bases and everything on Twitter with all this. So I think it matters to both sides. I think it obviously matters a little bit more to LeBron just because the Warriors have kind of been that thorn in his side for years, where the Warriors never existed. LeBron probably has 6-7 championships. It's just, you know, Steph went out there and then they got KD in it. They were just impossible to beat. So I think for LeBron, if he could beat the Warriors and you know, again, not even it up, but get it closer to even, I think that matters.
No, well, not only that, right? Remember when the Raptors won in 2019, it felt like they stamped out the dynasty. And they're the ones. There was an extra, like, layer to their title because of that. We just saw it in the first round with the Kings, Sam, right? That wouldn't have just been the Kings winning a first round series, which the city would have been, you know, adoring, if they had taken down the Warriors and potentially, you know, shoved the final dagger in the dynasty, because right, that's what we are potentially seeing right now. That's what felt like it was on the line in Game 7 when we were at yesterday. So, yeah, there's extra weight to beating the Warriors, and there's certainly extra weight to beating the Warriors if you may be the one that ends the Warriors.
Yeah, no, I agree with all that. You gave me a flashback, Slater, to pregame at Game 7, and I wrote this. These Warriors in their spirit, and it sounds weird to give a hat tip to an owner. Joe Lacob has never hit a jumper with a Warriors jersey on, but there is something wild about the way they move because – and I probably wasn't going to write this unless they won because, you know, and I got his green light to write it. But like they, I'm talking to Joe pregame and I don't even know why I was feeling so, I don't know what the word is, unfiltered, but I literally said to him like, man, I would love to kind of be a fly on the wall in your boardroom considering everything that's at stake. Of course you guys want to extend this runway and I'm paraphrasing, but I just put it on the table and said, but if you don't, if you lose tonight, like, my goodness. And it kind of just left it hanging right there. And Joe looks at me like I wrote, like I had three heads. He just turns his head, looks at me, goes, if we lose, we're not losing. You know, it was like, oh, okay. All right. You know, and they get it done. And that's who they are. I mean, they have defiantly continued to do their thing. And
they have, but there's a reason they went to seven against the Kings. There's a reason their backs were against the wall. There's a reason that game six existed where they got blown out by the Kings at home. This
I'm
is
not saying they're impervious.
A super stable state. They're not in a super stable state.
Well, listen, let's give a hat tip to what our Marcus Thompson and Shams wrote about that Steph Curry speech going into game seven. To your point, Slater, okay, the headline, the takeaway, the interesting part is, man, Steph, who never speaks up, had a lot to say to his guys. You know what else was clear that he had to handle? He had to clean up their mess, which is guys are not in the right headspace. Guys were possibly looking at their own situations and getting sideways in terms of the way they are functioning or not
there's
functioning.
There's been a lot of sniping.
Right.
And that's it. Me and Marcus just did kind of like a secondary video that's on the Athletic's YouTube feed. Andrew Schleck, you're going to be very happy I said that. YouTube feed, subscribe now. Watch this. Me and Marcus did a video kind of going into more detail about what Steph may have, why he felt the need to deliver that speech. But you know, it's not anything over the top. There's no explosive, you know, like a preseason punch type situation that has happened, like round two of that, but it's just a lot of sniping. And as Sam mentioned, like personal situations, Jordan Poole's and his struggles are obviously at the forefront of that. Jonathan Kuminga not getting a role series. And
Slater, what you're hitting on is so interesting because we have, in the matter of 6 weeks, maybe, we have gone from, I mean, the two timeline discussion was still kind of alive 6 weeks ago. You know, the James Wiseman trade, of course, changed it a lot. And so it should surprise nobody that there's this human component behind the scenes internally with the Warriors where by the time you get to the playoffs, like Steph and the old fellas have basically, you know, like gotten this thing to a place where we're just extending the runway. That's what we're doing. And a large part of that is the young fellas have not stepped up and they have not seized the time that they've had. And I can see where that would cause a lot of angst.
Yeah. And again, this is the flaw of the plan that's easier to look back on and I guess diagnose, but it's like Jonathan Kuminga, understandably, as a raw prospect coming in and he's still very young, isn't necessarily ready to play high level playoff defensive basketball and just eliminate defensive mistakes and only play sharp, you know, role player type stuff. I think he's really good. I think he's gonna be a really good player. I think Jonathan Kuminga at 25 is gonna be like fringe all-star wing potentially. He flashed a lot in his second season. So I don't want to look back and go failed draft pick. I don't think it's a failed draft pick, but you know, when they need specific 4 minute spurts from a role player in a series, it's tough to tell second year player that wants to go out there and be like, ooh, I'm on the playoff stage. Let me get my Paul George on right now. It's like, no, they don't need that. They need the role playing stuff. And right. I like that imbalance, that difficult to navigate situation that I just didn't think they saw coming when they decided to infuse the roster with all this youth. And it's been a problem. And then I just think Poole's had a up and down choppy season and he had a bad first round series. He was really good in the playoffs last year. Jordan Poole was probably what, their fourth, fifth most important player in the playoffs. So I just think he's in a little slump.
Good stuff. Jovan, who are you going with in this one? I think you said you had Warriors.
So No, so originally I had Warriors, then I dug into it more. I'm going Lakers in seven, but it's like 50.1% confidence versus, you know, 49. Like, this is like splitting. Like, I'm really tempted. Like, you know, I might change my mind before game one. I think this is a really close series.
Lakers moving on.
I do think it's going seven. Yeah. And I think there's a chance that, like, you know, we see one of those LeBron performances that, if this ends up going seven and it's like you have a chance, you know, Slater was saying, like, to end the Warriors, it's Mortal in Chase Kombat Center. Style. It's not the same, you know, it's not the same as Oracle. No offense, but it's just, you know, and I think that's where you could see LeBron kind of summon something we haven't really seen from him, and he could have his own kind of game seven moment. But yeah, I mean, it's close. I think the war, like, I'm more confident, I guess, in the Warriors matchup advantages than the Lakers. I do think that the 3-point shooting is something that Lakers are gonna have trouble kind of matching up with, because they just don't have the same firepower. But I think two of the three best players are on LA's side, so I'm gonna lean Lakers slightly, but I could easily see Warriors winning this.
Lakers are gonna be able to stop the Warriors, I think, for long stretches. That's the way they win. I just think if they really condense it up, a game seven in Chase Center, it would be at the end of what would have been a marathon series. And for the Warriors, you're talking about a marathon 20-day stretch where game five, game six, game seven was all played, you know, with only one day off of the King series, I'm talking about. And we know just the emotion surrounding those games. And then you're talking about only one day off between every game of the series. You're talking about game seven will be, like I said, the 10th straight game with only one day off, high level, high intensity in Shea Center for both teams, older teams. I bet that would be like a super low scoring, like, physical, you know, drawn out marathon game seven where both teams are sitting there knowing the conference finals, whoever wins, starts, you know,
it's like
2 days later.
Lakers Celtics 2010.
Yeah.
Jovan, so I got Warriors in this thing. I don't know how many games. It's always, you know, I mean, seven sounds pretty exciting.
Let's go seven. Just commit to it.
I'm with Slater on the idea that the Warriors offense, I think, is going to struggle a lot more. The Kings played better defense than I thought they would, but that's a measured compliment because their defense was pretty bad in the regular season. And I think they will struggle at the rim. Steph's not going to be able to do, I don't think, what he did in game seven against the Kings on the regular. You know, they could become that jump shooting team that then gets a little sideways on that end. So, Warriors, however long, you know what I mean? Seven's possible, maybe a little bit earlier, but I think Golden State moves on. Slater?
Yeah. I actually lean Lakers in seven. I think it's going to be really difficult for the Warriors to score. I think that this is the end of what is a very tiring season for the Warriors. I think you saw it in that King series. It is very difficult to pick against, you know, particularly the player I just saw score 50 in a game seven, and, you know, what Draymond is as a playoff competitor, what Clay has been, what their coaching staff has shown over the course of series, you know, figuring stuff out. But I just, it feels a little bit like that Raptors series, in the end of that playoff run, where it was just like the exhaustion felt like it was catching up to the franchise in general, organizational fatigue. We all know the situation looming with Bob Myers, even with Draymond, all the summer stuff. I just think if the Lakers can really defend at, you know, a very, very focused level, I just think it's going to be tough for a tired Warriors team. And I think game one is very stealable for the Warriors, or for the Lakers. And that's the one to go into Chase and to try to get. And, you know, maybe I'll be ridiculed for picking against them because it is difficult to pick against them. But I just, I think they're vulnerable.
Fair enough. All right, gentlemen. Appreciate you. Look forward to seeing y'all in person, doing our thing, and we'll see you down at Chase tomorrow. And thank you, as always, to the listeners. We'll talk to you soon.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.